Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, The Deep Dive, featuring your esteemed hosts, Andy Monitor and Drew Dinzik, powered by BetSperts.
Welcome to The Deep Dive. I almost forgot my derby hat.
You got like a good hat.
Forgot it. Almost.
I have a good hat in the truck. I'm debating like leaving the show for 2 minutes to get it. If Drew starts talking all the time.
There's no chance of that because that never happens.
One of his diatribes. But yes, it's Derby week. We would be such remiss if we didn't welcome in friend of the show, friend of the horses, Mike Somo Bomb. So much live. Live and in person, talking horses with us. You've given us some winners over the years, and we appreciate that. And shit snuck up on us. We were mentioning this the other week. We don't remember the draft and the derby being this close together. I feel like there was always 2 weeks between them. So it really hit me like a hammer this week, and I had to do a lot of catch up. How's your week been going?
It's been a busy week. Been a very busy week. A lot of different shows, a lot of different hits. And I got to give props to Churchill Downs. The undercards on Friday and Saturday, they drew them last Saturday. So, like, I've already been handicapping for 4 or 5 days, which is phenomenal heading into this show. Excited to talk about some spot plays on both days. But then being able to watch the replays and understand, okay, where are these horses drawn? How can we attack it? Like, it's so nice to have these cards drawn. Normally, they draw them on Monday, right? And then you get the past performances on Tuesday. We do the show on Wednesday. So, it's just bam, 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 right? They drew on Saturday for all of the races on both cards. So it gave you a lot of time to be able to handicap, really dive in and form some opinions, which I'm excited to talk about.
That was a question. Was there reasoning? Did anyone tell you why? Because when Drew showed me that, I'm like, I was super sure they don't draw this early. Like sent me that, because it was official.
It's been a huge mistake.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, they screwed up. They got their dates wrong. Was there reasoning for the early draw?
Maybe logic smacked them in the face. Like, why you wouldn't draw this a week early every single year? I do not know. Like, I've been saying, like, every single major race, give us the past performances on the Saturday before. Give people time to look into this, dive into it, get excited. The Breeders' Cup does it that way. Finally, Churchill Downs decided to do that way as well. So, I'm going to assume they just fell victim to logic here and actually decided to do it the right way.
I love it. Well, before we get into the actual nuts and bolts, the meat and potatoes of this year's Derby, a hearty thank you to you for two things. Number one, making time for our humble podcast on what is, I'm sure, one of the busiest weeks, if not the busiest week of your entire calendar. Number two, beyond just all of your outstanding insights in years past, you had a sincere conviction last year about Mr. Mage, and I happened to be in the company of some of my childhood heroes, who I ironically was older than, in Pedroia and Ellsbury, former Red Sox, and they all wanted to know who was going to win, and I said, well, my guy says it's going to be Mage, and sure enough, stood there, watched the race with him, and Mage won. It was phenomenally fun, probably the best single sporting moment of my life, just for just for the circumstances. So hearty thank you. And I think the Deep Dive listeners in general, excited to hear what you have to say about this year's race. And I can actually kind of tease it a little bit, because we're not on the same page this year. we were kind of on the same page last year, but this year feels, number one, more wide open to me than most years. And number two, I feel like you kind of have to take a stand with something that you think is high confidence and just run with it. And for me, it's Pace Thesis. And for me, that hurts the favorite. And I know you are a fierceness guy. So this is going to be a really interesting conversation. See if you could twist my arm that fierceness is a bet. And I'm going to do the opposite, and we'll see where we land here. So this is going to be a constructive podcast more than instructive, I think. We'll see what we end up at the end. But talk to me about the prep. The run up, the races. Do you feel like we got a good field? Are there horses you wish were here? Are there storylines that we need to pay attention to in terms of how this field is shaped that will affect the handicap?
Yeah, I mean, this is a first off, thanks for having me back, guys. Appreciate it. Love doing this podcast with you guys, and love to hear your Derby story last year, Drew. How it treated you. I gotta say, the best comment I got from doing all that media last year around Mage was from a Deep Dive listener. I think I might have mentioned this to you at Breeders' Cup. There was someone who was the best man in his best friend's wedding, There were five groomsmen. They all put $100 down on Mage. So $600 win ticket, handed it to the bride and groom. The wedding watched the race. The bride and groom win $9,000, paid for the honeymoon, paid for everything. Just a phenomenal story that I got via Twitter from the Deep Dive family afterwards. So just wanted to make sure that I give that person a shout. I looked back to find the name on my Twitter DMs. I couldn't find it today, but it's awesome to hear that kind of thing. Glad you got a great experience out of it too. This year's feels interesting, man. I have two future tickets coming into it. One of them's on Forever Young at 25-1, who's a Japanese horse. I bet it about 6 weeks ago. And the reason I bet it is I was wildly underwhelmed with the current competitors at that point inside the U.S. market. I didn't love what we had seen from Fierceness in the first prep back. I didn't love Sierra Leone specifically because of his style. Catching Freedom didn't become Catching Freedom yet, really. Anna Marie ran a really goofy Risen Star, hadn't come back and run well yet. We hadn't seen Just a Touch in a stakes race. We hadn't seen Catalytic in a stakes race. There were a lot of different horses that I was really low on 6 weeks ago that have moved up quite a bit. I think Forever Young, a horse I'm not going to be using now because I've been impressed with the progress of the U.S. horses over the last prep. And I think that's going to be a big story here. We talked about Mage last year, only his fourth career race, only the second horse really in our lifetime to win the Derby while debuting in January. We've got a lot of those horses that are now relevant, and we're seeing that progression here in that third, fourth start of their lifetime. And some of those I think have a legit shot at winning again this Saturday.
Can you talk a little bit about the, not just prep races, but it's almost like prep seasons. I know in podcast pasts with us, we've made comparisons to like football conferences. You know, this is the SEC.
It's the
perfect, you know, another good analogy would almost be back to college, but college basketball. You know, teams coming into March Madness be like, hey, you know, we do this every year. It's like, oh, I'm fading the Big Ten because they just beat up on each other and none of them are good. Or, oh my God, the Big East is coming in. I think the Mountain West was our squads this year that everyone loved. But, you know, I talked to you a little off air. I've tried to avoid all Mike So Much content because I wanted a fresh mind. I said, I'm not going to avoid it completely. I'm going to listen to you later on this week when I'm getting really ready. But I did, I was forced to hunt down some other podcasts and I had some nuggets, and a lot of those nuggets I wanted to ask Mike. I'm like, do you agree with this? Do you disagree? And one of the big ones was, you know, of the areas where you can prep, they said not impressed with the Florida prep stuff. They said, you know, some of these horses, it looks good on paper, you got a win, you got a nice finish, you beat this horse, you beat that horse, but somebody, I don't even remember which one it was, but they mentioned it multiple times, they weren't impressed with the horses that were coming out of the Florida prep races.
Do you remember the narrative last year?
Yes,
the Florida preps weren't very good. How's that go for you, buddy?
I know that's a...
Look, you're dead on. You got to pick kind of where you want from a prep perspective. And it's nice when you see some of these horses mix with each other because it can give you an idea before the big race. Yeah, no, there is definitely an advantage in Louisiana. There's definitely an advantage in Arkansas and Kentucky and New York and Florida, wherever those races are from. And the Florida, specifically the Florida preps this year, I think are really difficult because Fierceness is your favorite. He ran one really bad race, the first race back off the layoff, and Hades wins that race. And Hades stinks, okay? Just not a very good horse. Let's just get that out of the way. Comes back, runs in another prep. Terrible, right? But everyone kind of knew he wasn't good. Then Fierceness comes out and runs in the Florida Derby and airs. The question is, what was behind Fierceness? And I think that's a big part of, if you're an anti-Fierceness person, you make the argument, well, he beat absolutely nothing, and he had it his own way. And that's just that, right? And so you have to say, and we'll get into this in a little bit because I am a Fierceness guy. You have to go back to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and you have to point to that race where he didn't make the lead. He was second in that race, so he did have to pass a horse and he beat Muth. And if you comp out Muth, Muth won the Arkansas Derby and did it very, very impressively. Would probably be your second choice in this race. So it's a little bit more difficult with the Florida circuit this year because top to bottom, you didn't see the same depth that you've seen in other years. And so that really raises into question, hey, how good is Fierceness? We also saw Louisiana pull out one of the most impressive preps that you are ever going to see heading into the Derby. Sierra Leone wins that race, the Risen Star. Catching Freedom was in that race. Anna Marie was in that race. Track Phantom was in that race. They're all in the Derby. And two of them, I think, are legitimate players in the Derby as well. So you could make a pretty solid argument that Louisiana was the best circuit. And they have been good in years past as well, specifically the last couple of years. But the Florida argument is a tough one to make for me. And you also have to look back at, historically, the most productive prep heading into the Derby has been the Florida Derby. And that's because what trainers are down there at Gulfstream for that meet?
Yeah, I can't challenge any of that. And actually, but I can shine a little bit of light on why people would throw shade on Florida. The Fountain of Youth was a phenomenal bust. And the Tampa Bay Derby might have was that a gallop? The first half of that race, what was the leader? 51? Like the absolute joke of pace in the Tampa Bay Derby. So like two of the three kind of super most high profile Florida races kind of fell flat. And the Fountain of Youth hurt me specifically because I had a big old fat ticket on Speakeasy that got scratched as he was walking into the freaking gate, which is like absurd. I still haven't been able to, I was flying when it happened. I didn't see it. And I still have yet to see the tape of exactly how that played out. Cause he had Irad freaking Ortiz Jr. And I'm like, how does that happen? Like, I just still don't understand it. Cause the fastest horse I saw in the entire race.
Give your take, Drew, on the Florida Derby then. The results of the Florida Derby as an anti-fierceness golfer person.
No, there's no anti-fierceness about the Florida Derby. The Florida Derby told you that their best horse in this race is fierceness, period. Like, I don't think that that's even an objectionable opinion at this point. He is, somewhere between 8 and 12% better than the next best horse in this race based on the data of that race. And who cares if the field's kind of stunk. But I will say, though, that like the degree to which he won was fueled by the fact that he got to dictate the early fractions, right? If someone else is pushing the early fractions, maybe it's a little bit more competitive race. He probably wins still going away, maybe even. But it was dominant to the degree that it was specifically because he was the pace setter. And that's where it really comes down to.
His Byron number, his time form number, his Brisnet number, all the normal handicapping numbers that you're going to hear from people who consistently do this, they're all inflated. They're all higher than what they probably should have gotten because, look, when a horse gets loose on the lead, who is also the best horse in the race, they're going to run their best race 99 times out of 100. And that's what we saw from Pearson. He got loose and he just like, guess what, guys? I'm just better than you. It's like a junior in high school sprinting against a sixth grader. We all know the outcome once you get that start. If they get off the block, it's over, right? Yeah. The big thing for me is
it's Mike Vick.
Yeah, it was Usain Bolt in London S.
Have you seen
that? He's clowning the camera as he's going across.
Have you seen that at Atlanta where he races Mike Vick?
No, what?
It's a show, Atlanta.
Oh yeah,
you should watch that. It's pretty good. Dumb down. Let's just dumb down the buyer number for people who just aren't familiar because it's almost a contradiction in terms here. You say he got to dictate the pace. The field wasn't that good. He ran handily. I think we had a 47-2 split there, it looks like. But the buyer number is still 106, which is good. Huge. Great.
Yeah. Well, his closing fraction was like just obscene, right?
Yeah,
like,
and that's what I'm saying for Mike. If you kind of dumb down the buyer number and how you can use that to determine what happened in a race like that.
A buyer speed figure is faulty in how it is actually mathematically created. So that's one of the big things that one of the reasons why I love buyer, but it's because it's the most commonly used, but you also have numbers that are inflated because of it. So when creating a buyer number, they look at the same race, same distance. So like that was a mile and a 16th race. So all other Gulfstream Park dirt races going a mile and a 16th for three-year-olds only over the last 5 years. How fast was the time and how fast did they come home? Specifically the last essentially quarter mile, right? That's what creates a buyer number. Well, if a horse who is naturally very good gets to go slow early and be really comfortable, they're going to have more energy coming home just naturally, right? So you're going to get a higher buyer number than you would necessarily in past Florida Derbies. Like, let's look at last year's Florida Derby. Going into it, going out of it, everyone was knocking the buyer numbers. But when you look at the race, Forte was 5 wide on both turns. Mage was 4 or 5 wide on both turns. Both of them got stopped at multiple points in that race. They're going to have a low buyer because the time for a mile and a 16th is going to be slower than when Fierceness gets to just roll on the front end. He's going to be faster than those guys. And so that's why the buyer number is a little bit faulty to me. Time form, which is a number that takes into account early pace and late pace, I think makes much more sense because it also covers ground lost. So if a horse is 3 wide, they adjust the time for being 3 wide around both turns. And so there's a little bit more sophistication toward a time form number. Now, that being said, time form has fierceness about 10% better than anyone's best race in this race twice, not just the Florida Derby. And this is the key. If you're going to make the argument for fierceness and you reference only the Florida Derby, I have a problem with it. If you're going to make the argument for fierceness and you reference the Breeders' Cup Juvenile as well, now we're talking, because it's not once he's done it. It's twice that he has done put. It's gone up ahead and put up that number.
Okay, so two knocks on fierceness that I've heard colloquially that I don't agree with that I'd like you to just sort of dispel. The first is he's got an on-off pattern.
Nonsense. It's NBA playoff season.
Are zigzag. Yes. Are we tell us how zigzag? Tell us the zigzag narrative is bullshit when it comes to fierceness. Is
I mean, the layoff times were so much different. I mean, how much time between the juvenile people, and the next the race?
People pointing to zigzag is absurd.
The zigzag theory in horse racing is bullshit. Period. Like there isn't there. Like you're not going to have. You have certain horses that yes can run very big, but you got to look at everything contextually. We've seen four races from this horse. He's run two very good ones. He's run two not so good ones. The not so good ones, there's a whole lot of excuses, right? If you go back and watch a Champagne, he get bumped at the start. He's in between horses. He's never clear, never on the outside, which I think is actually the key with fierceness. He likes being wide. He likes being outside of horses. And then you go back. Look, Pletcher never gears up his horse first off the layoff. And that's where we saw him lose. It was a 75% effort from fierceness first off the layoff. He also had trouble at the start. Like, to me, I would say that the issues in the race are more prevalent than the zigzag theory, which a lot of people point to.
Okay, perfect. Now, the real reason he's not going to win is because he's wearing 17, right?
Well, I mean, technically, he now is wearing 16 because he's in the 16 gate.
He's in the 16 gate, but he's wearing the cursed number.
Well, okay. I mean, yeah, we could say that. But now, if we look at who is broken, it's funny. I kind of wish he stayed in the 17 post, because then a bunch of talking heads would go around blowing hot air how the 17 post is over 150. There's only been 43 17 horses before it. There hasn't been 150. Yeah. And there's only been two favorites that have broken out of that gate. And oh, by the way, since they went to 20 posts, no horse has been under 25-1 breaking out of the 17 post. So a lot of it.
Wait. Wasn't Irish War Cry? That was guy he a 17? He was a 17.
Maybe.
He
was. But no, I mean, that's interesting too. Because
he sucked. But
I didn't dig too deep into this, but I looked into just like, all right, well, what's the lucky gate? And it's the five. The five is the most common. And then I think 8 and 10 were right behind it.
5 to 8.
And they said,
sick. Yeah, that's slick.
And five was the winner, based on what I found on the internet. And it said out of 94. So just historical horse racing stuff. Did they just not use gates in the 20s? They just lined up a bunch of horses next to each other, put a rope in front of them, or what?
I don't know if you even. Like, there's been 150 derbies. There haven't been 151 horses either. Like, that's the thing. It's like, it's kind of crazy when you go back and you look at through all these different stats. I ran all the gate numbers. This was 2 years ago. There were 92 starters from the 1 through 6 posts. And then it went down from there. Percentage wise, only the 5, the 8, and the 10 at this point are over 10% win percentage. I think the more interesting thing is that the horses between the 5 and 10 posts have a 20% show percentage. So those horses between 5 and 10 make up 20% of the shows throughout it. And when you look at like the inside draws, there's 15 winners from the 1 or 2 gate. No one has won from the 1 or 2 gate since 1986. Yeah, so they're old for the last like 66 horses.
So they're due. No,
I'm joking. Yeah, so Drew is so, you know,
No. I think we did a good job of dispelling the absurdly stupid reasons to not believe in fierceness. Let's talk about the people who don't want to believe him because of zigzag and look for reasons why. And they literally point to everything didn't go right. And I know that you pointed out in the Breeders' Cup, Juvenile, that he did have to pass a horse. Like, he did have to, you know, overcome some adversity, and he was priced weirdly. And I think, I just want to hear you say it out loud. I know that you hold Muth high. And I feel like if Muth was in this field, we might be having a different discussion.
I watched
Muth at the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and I watched him at the Arkansas Derby back-to-back recently. That horse is different now. He's literally grown up. Like, he has physically changed. And, oh, by the way, considering who trains him, we shouldn't be shocked. Like, he's physically, he's a racer now. right? He's probably going to win the Preakness. You know, we don't know this. We don't know what, you know, he probably could go off his favorite for the Preakness unless, you know, Fierceness just literally, you know, dumps on this field. But the point is of the people who look at the Zigzag and they say, you know, there is something there. They point to adversity. And in a 24 horse field and breaking from 17, the likelihood that he is going to have to overcome adversity in this race is high. Would you agree?
That would be the big argument for me. I agree that we have not seen him overcome a tough trip yet. We haven't seen him be able to battle through unfortunate circumstances, which is, like you said, with 20 horses, a likely scenario. Now, I think the 17 post was actually a really good draw for him. I think the 16 is just fine as well. If I look back and what trip do I picture Fierceness to have where he doesn't have to deal with anything? It's breaking outside. It's being able to say, you know, go with the one, go with the 10, go with the 12, set the pace. I'm going to sit three wide on both turns right behind you. And when I want to tilt out, I can tilt out. I can be outside a kickback. I can go four wide down the backstretch. Then I can go four wide around the final turn. I'll give up the multiple lengths, losing by not being on the inside, because I'm better than the rest of this field. And I have the tactical speed to sit close if I need to, if the pace is slow. That to me is the reason why I like Fierceness so much in this spot, because I don't think he has an overly high chance of getting into trouble. And I do think he's the best horse. And to me, when you kind of combine those two things, it makes it tough. And it's hard for me to sit here and pick a favorite. I think we've done this 4 years. I've never picked a favorite in the Derby before. I've always said, you know, let's take a 12-1, let's take a 20-1. This is the highest variance race all year you'll see in America, because there are 20 horses and every one of them has never gone a mile and a quarter before. But in certain scenarios, you got to just look at it and say, look, this is the best horse and I can picture the best trip for him.
I'm glad you said in America, because the Grand National has like 90 horses in it.
It gets the
messiest, stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. Sorry if you're a fan of that sort of racing. And just back to that, when I put my thesis of how things happen together over the last couple of days, my dumb reptile brain who bets horses four times a year, ran it. It was two things. So from everything I heard people talking about, how they felt the other horses would want to run the race, how Fierceness and his jockey would want to run the race, how he was comfortable running the race. And I kind of ran into like the two, well, either he gets to run wide on the outside because a couple of the other speed horses take it and, you know, try to set a little bit of the pace, and he's super comfortable doing that, or nobody tries to set the pace and he's just better. And he, you know, he just wins going away for some reason because everyone else runs a stupid race. But in the end, the biggest truth in horse racing is, and there have been horses and fields maybe that have broken this exception to the rule, whatnot, but you still have to have a good ride. You have to have a good trip. It doesn't matter how good you are. You have to have the right trip for the most part. So like, what is the worst case scenario? Like early on, if you see this, be like, ooh, that's not good for Fierceness. What could happen, you know, other than just like somebody bumping him out of the gate and something obvious?
He misses the break in any way, shape, or form is the first problem, right? Because 21 Epic Ride drawing in speed to his outside now, who can clear him if he wants to, if Fierceness allows him to. So that could create a problem for Fierceness if the 21 crosses over him and all of a sudden you're catching kickback and Fierceness reacts negatively to it.
You're taking my negative points, man. Come on.
The other one is if they cook up front, and there is a possibility they cook up front and Johnny V doesn't recognize it, and all of a sudden he's three wide and he's a length off a 22 and change pace, a length off a 45 and 5 pace, that's where you start to worry, because someone's coming. It could be a couple someones, but someone's coming, and I'm not sure he can finish the job if he is off that fast of a pace. If they do go 45.4 seconds, he needs to be in seventh, eighth, not fourth, fifth. And that's going to be a big part of it, where it's the pace, it's Epic Ride clears him. And if he faces the adversity, again, the two races he lost, the adversity he faced was being bumped at the start, catching kickback, and not being comfortable on the outside. That could happen. Yeah. It's less likely to happen because of where he drew, but it definitely could happen.
Yeah. I honestly think that we haven't even gotten to the most likely thing that stops him in all of the things that I brought up, which is a pace melt. And I think we need to come up with a fair probability of a pace melt. And I want to start by saying that the field for the Kentucky Derby, to me, while even saying that it's wide open-ish, looks weak. there are a lot of horses that I saw run this year that are not here, that are better. And there are a lot of horses that are in this race that I'm like, the fuck you doing here? And yeah. Honestly, like but at that same time, there are horses in this race who have early speed. And like this almost to me feels like harkens back to Kentucky Derbies of yore, right? Before the point system, when they had this whole bunch of sprinters qualifying for this race, and it was just kind of a quasi-weak field. This is sort of what I'm looking at right now as I'm looking at results. And I worry that there is kind of a little bit of an uptick of sprinters who have found their way in, who can cook on the first half here, like we had 2 years ago, which, of course, was the pace melt of all pace melts that opened the door for Rich Strike to do the weirdest, dumbest thing I've ever seen. And I think the I think that the like I didn't have that sense until I saw the draw and I saw Dornock go get one. And what and I guess just for the listeners' context, if you're not as deep into the weeds as the three of us, Dornock is a good horse. He's a champion. He's won some big races. He won the Fountain of Youth, which was a joke. He was awful in that race and still won. And he plateaued at a shorter distance than he's going to be asked to run on Saturday. But he can go fast early. Like we know this, like there's proof, like we know he can go fast early. And he drew the one, which means that the trainers, the connections, the plan is determined for them. Like hit the gas. Like we're talking about verifying last year, right? Like you're in the two, you got early speed, you better fucking go. And I feel like that's kind of what Dornock is stuck with here, which means he's going to have to take the lead out of the one, and he's probably going to be setting the pace. And I think there are enough horses kind of in that middle portion. I'm looking specifically at TO Password and Track Phantom, who are going to kind of take the lead with him and get us out to a pretty aggressive frenetic first half, assuming that it is a fast track. Throw out the window, whatever, if it's an off track. And right now it doesn't look like it will be, but we'll, you know, who the hell knows?
I think it should be tightened up by Saturday.
Yeah, it probably will be.
If everything holds, it should be good.
It should be fine. If this is a 1:10:12 on the break and 21 gets involved, because he's just got early speed and he's a maniac. Like if those horses are going for it and fierceness is running with them, even if he's in the second wave, I think there's a chance that he goes out too fast and that he can be caught.
It's definitely possible. One of the most interesting data points, if you look at the Derby, of all the horses in the field from the prep races, so they look at the prep schedule only, the fastest opening half mile where any horse in this field held the lead was Fierceness going 47-2 in the Florida Derby.
Mm.
Now, the Bluegrass had a faster pace. They went 46 and two to the half mile. And there were three horses that are going to be in here that I think are all legitimate pace contenders. So I'm not saying we will see that slow of a pace. I'm just saying there are not horses that are in here that want to necessarily burn out of the gate. I do agree with you. I think Dornock, specifically from the one.
What else can you do, though?
100% goes, right? Yeah. The question for me is TO Password. If TO Password, and you mentioned the Rich Strike year, that was a Japanese sprinter.
Summer is tomorrow. Nuts
up front. Yes, exactly. If we that get that same thing.
Never forgive that horse.
I hate that horse. If we get that same thing early, that's what could create this pace meltdown. I think realistically we're looking at, I'll say 45.9, 46 flat opening half mile. I think that's what the most likely pace scenario is. Now, Epic Ride's a little interesting. He was a sprinter before stretching out. He can go 44, 45 to the half mile if he wants to. We'll see what he does from the 21. If he absolutely goes, that could create a little bit of havoc. Track Phantom, a lot of people talk about being a speed horse. Track Phantom goes like 48 to the half mile. He's adding blinkers. He needs to decide to just gun it. And I'm not sure that gunning it is necessarily the best plan for Track Phantom. And if you look at, for instance, all those Louisiana races, he got slow paces and was not quick out there. And he does have a little more speed in him. Don't get me wrong, but I don't see him being the one who's really pushing the pace like a lot of people are. I think Just a Touch is a little bit interesting. Just a Touch was part of that pace setup in the Bluegrass. He went out in 46-2, was a length behind that lead. Okay. I just don't think Brad Cox wants to send him. I think Brad Cox tells them, let's raid off this lead. Let's not go crazy. If all of that plays out, I think we're looking at high 45s, low 46s in the pace. If they go really fast, Drew, yeah, you're right. That's going to be a problem for Pearson.
Okay.
Pearson.
That's the question about the inside, though, Drew.
I need to stay on this for just a second. So last year, I didn't have the pace where it was. I didn't. I didn't have verifying being able to do that. Like these horses, even the speed horses are in there. They are, you know, this is going to be the fastest they run, right? Like, there's going to be, you know, even a guy like Track Phantom, who's 48.1, like if he throws a 46.5, should we be shocked? Probably not. Right.
No. And that's the thing is when you have 20 horses, you have less options. And when you're an inside speed horse, your option is to go. And you go as fast as you need to go to make sure you don't get crossed over and don't get like, because if Dornock, let's say Dornock goes out and runs a 23 opening quarter, but all of a sudden their horses that ran 22 and 4 crunching down on the rail against him, his race is over. He has no choice. He has to. And that's what happened with Verifying. Verifying had to get to the front to have any prayer. So Dornock is in that same similar situation. The question is, how fast are we going to see everybody else? Also, when you have 20 horses breaking out of the gate, you're generally going to see a faster pace. There's more horses that are going to vie for the lead than when you have 8 horses or 10 horses breaking out there. It's interesting because the last 2 years, and this is one of the big questions for me, because we have a subset of 10 races now since we saw them go to the point system. 7 of them have been won by horses who were first, second, or third at the half mile. 7 of them have had slow half mile times. 3 of them have been won by horses who came from 14th, 15th, or 16th. And we have 3 of the fastest half mile times in Derby history. It's really handicapping that pace and deciding, you know, 10 is not a big sample size. You guys talk about this all the time in sports betting. You need 100 for a sample size. So you don't really know how this has officially affected it. You have to try and make your best guess as to what you expect the pace to be. And I think we will have a, like I said, high 45, low 46 type pace in this race.
Okay. So final question then. You're clocking it. You hear the call. The number comes in. At what number are you like, it's over, Fierceness gets it?
If they run 45.9, it's over.
Wow. Okay.
The problem is everyone else has to figure out how to get there.
Yeah.
Right. Like, because you know the other favorite in here, Sierra Leone. I don't know if you guys remember the podcast last year. We talked about Tappet Trice. Tappet Trice was your favorite in the Derby. I talked about that horse being last under the wire first. Guess what? He was, and he ran a great race and ran 7th. Sierra Leone's going to be last under the wire again here. And so your other main favorite, the other horse that offers the biggest threat from an odds perspective, a numbers perspective, is completely screwed over by the post.
Yeah, what is the largest field that like Sierra Leone has run a race in? 11? At any sort of like 10, 11?
It's got to be 10 or 11, yeah.
Yeah, the traffic for closers can be an issue if you don't run a good race. And that's my question on the inside, because the only other horse that's, you know, obviously Sierra Leone as a closer would be something, and that a closer's fun. Like, I think I like closers because that kind of race is just fun when you come around the turn and eight.
The Abel Tasman's still my favorite closer.
You just hammer the gas. Like that's so fun. Mm-hmm. But no, my question is about Mystic Dan, but it's regarding Catching Freedom, because like we said, Dornock is the first. It's the one. It's on the rail, speed horse, has to just ride the rail, has to go. Sierra Leone 2, it's a horse that's going to drop for sure. Like that's just the race you're going to run. That's the horse. So what does Mystic Dan do? Because I like Catching Freedom. I don't know how I feel about the two, you know, the Risen Star and the LA Derby. As far as what are those grade twos? And then I guess he won the Smarty Jones Stakes too. I don't know how you feel about that horse, but is there a spot for Catching Freedom to be on the pace because Mystic Dan gets shuffled back as well?
I think, well, Catching Freedom probably is going to be late pack, I would say. We'll call it 14th, 15th, somewhere in that range. And Catching Freedom is a really interesting horse. So I've got a future on Catching Freedom at 25-1. I'm interested in Catching Freedom. I thought this was a horse you have to keep an eye on. I think there's a lot of comps to Angel of Empire from last year. Same trainer, Brad Cox, same jockey, yep. Flavian Pratt, won the Louisiana Derby, did so from coming off the pace, wants to be a closer. And Flavian Pratt gave Angel of Empire a phenomenal ride last year. If you go back and you watch that race, Angel of Empire lost the race to a specific hole to Mage at about the half mile pole. And had he won it, he would have won the Derby. That was the difference in the Derbies, that Mage was just a slight little more athletic and a little more push button, could hit the gas and get to that hole a little bit quicker than Angel of Empire can. Catching Freedom, I think, comps very well to Angel of Empire. The issue is when you're outside, you're too wide around the first turn. You're three wide around the first turn. You can go in or out when you're picking your hole, which to attack. When you're inside, it makes it a lot more difficult. So Flavien Prat not going to have as many options when he's in the backstretch as he would have if he's on the, in the 16 post in this spot. I think Catching Freedom, legit contender to win the race if he trips out. The if he trips out is the problem. I think he's a great underneath horse. I think he struggles to win the race.
Okay, so we can say the most likely thing to happen is Fierceness breaks. He gets a clean trip. He wins. And he's great. We all should have seen this coming. You saw this coming, right? Okay, that's the most likely thing that happens, right? But the price fucking sucks, and yeah, we just get to live with
it's
that.
Push,
okay?
It's pushed out a little. We're sitting out at seven to five right now, and
we're in the part of the cycle where everyone's talking to themselves into another horse. There's only a half million dollars.
If he had a grand on Justify, the price didn't suck, and they're going to be the same price.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. But is he a Justify? I don't see it. I mean, maybe relative to the field he is, but he's not a Justify. All right. So the second most likely thing I think is that the pace is hot, as it has been now a couple years in a row. That impacts Fierceness's ability to stay at or near the lead as they come around the turn, and that opens the door up for the closers. And you brought up Catching Freedom. Honor Marie is in the conversation. The second choice, Sierra Leone, is in the conversation. But I think there's a distinction between these three horses in that Sierra Leone, number one, the price is awful. Mm-hmm. And number two, hasn't really ever shown any kind of tactical speed if they feel like running a different style of race. Like, they are kind of stuck with what they got. Like, they got what they got, right? Yep. It is what it is. Catching Freedom and Honor Marie, I think, are in a little bit different conversation. And I want to know if you agree with this, because the number of times that I've handicapped any kind of race and I've looked at workouts is zero. Zero. I don't give a fuck. Like, who cares? Who cares what they ran in practice? Like, who cares? Right. But
practice.
We're talking about practice.
Horse practice.
but Honor Marie had a workout that was wildly quick. And surprisingly, does this horse have more speed than we realize? The next day, Catching Freedom basically just matched it. Not quite as good, but like pretty damn close, right? And so I'm wondering, like, do you think there will be a little bit of a tactical shift between either of those teams? And does that set them ahead of Sierra Leone in terms of actual likelihood of winning this race? Or is it stupid to even care about practice?
It is stupid to care about the final time of practice, but intent of practice, I do think, is important, and especially if you can try and read the intent of practice. And to me, Catching Freedom and Honor Marie, different stories. Catching Freedom worked with Encino. Encino was the 9, got injured the next day, scratched out of the race. I would have had Encino in my top 2 in this race had Encino got in. So kind of bummed about that.
Do you think he really got hurt, or because Brad Cox was on tape like right after that and was literally like, I think he knew he used too much in that workout, right?
The story is he went to the doctor in Keeneland the next day. So he worked on Tuesday, was lights out, went to the doctor on Wednesday. I'm sorry, worked on Monday, was lights out. Galloped on Tuesday. Right after the gallop, he looked like he was cooling down incorrectly. So they sent him to a veterinarian in Keeneland. Yeah. They said it was a muscle issue. It may have been part of the workout the previous day that caused the muscle issue in the gallop the next day. But I believe he's legitimately hurt because he's also out of the Preakness. Now, if they had said, we're holding him out for the Preakness, I'd be like, no, okay, cool. You just want to scratch him, you know.
Okay.
So, Catching Freedom has always had some tactical speed. That to me is the one thing that was surprising about those two runs in Louisiana, is that Catching Freedom went 47 to a half in the Smarty Jones when winning that race. But you go back to the two races at Fairgrounds, the Risen Star and Louisiana Derby, Catching Freedom went like 49 and 50 in those two races. So there is more speed inside Catching Freedom if he wants to show it on Derby Day. I think that's an advantage for him. In Anna Marie's case, I thought it was really good to see that horse go 47 to the half. I thought that was a very, very positive sign. And most people don't know these connections, right? They don't know the trainer, Whit Beckman. They don't know the jockey, Ben Curtis. Whit Beckman was an assistant for Chad Brown and Todd Pletcher. Ben Curtis was a top rider in Europe. Like, these guys know what they're doing. This isn't like just some people messing around off the streets with a Derby contender.
Yeah.
And Anna Marie is bred to go a mile and a quarter. If you listen to some interviews with Beckman back in the, like, I think it was like 2 months ago, he's like, the longer this horse goes, the better for us. He wants every bit of a mile and a quarter. And if you go back and you specifically watch those two races that he ran in Louisiana, the Risen Star and Louisiana Derby, the mental progression that you saw from the Risen Star, where that horse didn't run for literally half the race, was completely disinterested in running, and then decided to start closing down the stretch, to what we saw in the Louisiana Derby, I thought was a massive step forward. I think Anna Marie is a legit shot to win this if Fierceness doesn't fire.
Okay, so you're more inclined to play Fierceness to win, or you're more inclined to play Fierceness over Anna Marie Exacta?
I mean, I like the price of Fierceness.
Yeah, what about Anna Marie price T-box? Is so good. Okay, no, that was just a joke question, because without question, I will have that ticket. Don't think twice. Anna Marie, Anna Marie running down the rest of this field and coming across second after Fierceness just does whatever the hell he wants, is that's a very real outcome of this race. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's going to pay well. The real question I have for you, though, is are we even going to be in the ballpark of 20-1 on Saturday for Mr. Marie?
No, not even close.
You're already not.
I think it's 11-1 or 12-1 right now with about $100,000 in the pool. If you want to bet Anna Marie and you have access to offshore books, which I would not recommend you do, but if you do have, there are some nice prices out there right now in Anna Marie at like 25-1, 22-1.
So you're saying I should have limit bet this offshore. Okay.
I'm saying if you'd like to place a large wager with a guaranteed number better than what Anna Marie will break on Saturday, that would be a good way to do so.
I've done a decent amount of damage offshore, so yeah. I'm there. Anna Marie would be sick.
Kind of leads to a question, because we just breached it: the fixed odds versus the tote board versus the parimutuel odds. You hear this every, and again, another narrative you heard last year, you're going to hear it this year. And honestly, it's kind of coming true. I just have like the TVG numbers up with about 505 in the pool. And the third most bet horse is a Japanese horse. Are there other horses like that? You know, the narrative is the Japanese horses always get money. And that's what moves these odds around. Yeah. Is there one way or the other?
Stole the Marie horse. The name horses get money too.
Right? Yeah. Is there a horse that's going to take too much money in your opinion, and it's going to be a bad price, and you wouldn't want to use it in some of your horizontals or verticals? And is there the opposite, a horse that just, hey, this is somebody I like to hit the board, and nobody's going to love him? And then also, is Mattress Mac going to put a bet in?
Mattress Mac doesn't have any connections, right?
I think Mattress Mac has had a tough, rough couple of years.
He's got to be.
Especially craziest about that is the chalk keeps coming in. How is he losing at this point?
Yeah. It's not the chalk in Texas. He needs some more Texas.
Yeah, Houston didn't win March Madness. The Astros didn't win. It's been a streak. Maybe he just stays out of this one.
Yeah, so Sierra Leone is going to be overbet, and I can't harp on that enough. Like, I got asked on the podcast I do with Magic, my co-host on the Magic Mike show. He's like, what would it take for you to bet Sierra Leone? 8-10-1. That is what I believe fair odds would be on Sierra Leone. You're not getting anywhere near that.
What's the no price you're getting involved?
I am probably going to bet some no at Circa. I'll be there this weekend. I'll be in Vegas. The last I saw was -395.
Okay.
And I would be interested in some no at -395. Okay.
So you're telling me everybody I talk to out here who's like, who's the wise guy horse, I should say Sierra Leone.
Yes. Tell everybody to bet Sierra Leone. Okay. So I get a better no price.
Done.
Not if you run into some Red Sox.
Yeah.
Well, go. I won't tell them.
The truth to the Red Sox.
Yes. I mean, the real sad story is I'm a wise guy now, which means I've lost my edge and I just lose money betting. That's kind of the definition of a wise guy, but anyway, carry on.
So Sierra Leone to me is the one horse where I'm going to not use. And I honestly think Sierra Leone's a good horse, and I could see Sierra Leone running the top four. I just don't think the price actually represents the likelihood that Sierra Leone does that. I would not bet Fierceness over Sierra Leone in a head-to-head matchup. I want to make sure I'm clear about that. Even though I'm picking Fierceness on top and I don't like Sierra Leone, I think the floor is so much lower for Fierceness. Like, I will play some supers with both of them out of the super. Because if Fierceness has any type of problem early, You could play them to finish last at 50-1, and I wouldn't tell you you're crazy because it could go that bad, right? Sierra Leone most likely finishes between 6th and 8th in this race.
Yes.
I think that is really like his floor and ceiling, right? It's pretty compact there. Horses, no chance to win, but have a chance to hit the board, which I'd love playing.
No. Save this. Okay. Save this for the end. We're going to construct a super at the end. I want one more thing on Sierra Leone before we move off. There's been criticism from smart people that Sierra Leone is out of gas. Your opinion?
It's possible. I don't try and project that type of stuff.
The Bluegrass was a pretty physically demanding race, and that was a close call.
Pretty physically demanding, had a very fast pace in front, did not run him down. If you think Door Knock stinks like I do, the race before, really not that. I'm sorry, Track Phantom stinks like I do. The race before that, actually pretty unflattering. Like, yep. I could poke a lot of holes in the Sierra Leone boat even without the post. I could tell you I was not going to play Sierra Leone before the draw, and the draw just kind of cemented it for me.
Okay. But you're not of the opinion that there is evidence that we've seen the best of Sierra Leone.
I mean, we may have seen the best of him, but I would be surprised if he takes a massive step forward. I would agree with that comment. Like, I think that we've kind of seen the ceiling for what we're going to see from Sierra Leone, unless he loves the mile and a quarter distance. And that's the one question.
Okay. So on that point of seeing a ceiling, do you buy into the narrative of third off of a layoff? And do you buy the idea of what some of these trainers are doing of we're going to progress three races as a 2-year-old, and then we're going to hit two, climbing up the ladder, and then try to hit that peak on the third in the Derby? Like, this is a tried and true kind of strategy for the best trainers. Yeah.
I do believe in that one. Yeah. Because I think anytime you have a goal, be it horse racing, whatever it is, and you know, you're pointing toward that one specific goal, you're going to have the best probability of being successful at it. Right. And when all of these horses or all these trainers know they have a Derby horse, like Pletcher with Fierceness, the first race isn't important. The first race is to get the horse back on the track, to get it going. The second race, you need the points to enter. And the third race, you have to be the best version of yourself. If you know that's the goal going into the cycle, I think it's definitely relevant. I think it's irrelevant when some people talk about horses third off the layoff that had no clue they were going to be in the Derby third off the layoff. When they're running in like an allowance, they're hoping they're a stakes horse. To me, that's different because that horse was geared up and prepped and ready to go in that first race off the layoff.
Okay. Wasn't the long-term plan.
No, it's a nice to have.
Okay, Sierra Leone has a lot of strikes against him for a horse of that price. I think it's kind of what we're landing.
It's a great jockey.
If you get a good ride with a great jockey and you get a good kick, hitting the board is very well within the realm of possibility. It's still a very good horse. Haven't seen the improvement. There's a lot of traffic. It's a bad post. There's just a lot of strikes. Still the second best horse.
The key with Sierra Leone and why it's a clear stay away is do this long enough, you find reasons not to bet the favorites. And the reasons not to bet Sierra Leone are clear and obvious. The reasons not to bet Fierceness rely on something happening, which is a little weaker, I think. I think if you're going to go that route of betting against Fierceness because you want a price and because you're going to count on if this happens, because it has happened a lot recently, I think the obvious answer is Honorary. And the second choice is Catching Freedom. But that's just maybe a 1A, 1B based on price. And maybe 1A, 1B based on, I don't know if Catching Freedom is as good, but I don't know.
It is like betting against Mahomes, and your plan is that the running back fumbles four times.
This is not quite that. But yes. It's basically like you're betting against Mahomes, but you're like, the offensive line is going to suck in the Tampa Bay Bucks are going to sack him six times. Like that's kind of more of what you're doing. Right. The last couple of thoughts on Anna Marie, the Ben Curtis jockey thing is wild for those people who are not plugged into international racing. I was literally like, oh, this guy, this is a really familiar name. Like, what do I know? Ben Curtis. And I'm like looking at his record. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like he has like 20 starts. What the fuck? Like, how did he get this amount? And then I'm like, is he somebody's kid? Is that why I know his name? And then you dig in and you're like, oh, wait, no. He's a UK Jackie and he was in Louisiana for the fuck of it. And he did a great ride on Emery in the Louisiana Derby. So he stuck around for the Kentucky Derby. I see now. Like, it all, now it's all checking out. But, you know, that is a knock at the same time, which is that, you know, he is a great jockey, but he's never, you know, he didn't run Anna Marie on this track. The flip side of that is Anna Marie did run on this track and win last in the third race in his third race. He was pretty spectacular at the Kentucky Jockey. Anyway, enough about Anna Marie. Don't bet that horse. Keep your money out of the pool. God damn it. No, actually,
talk me out of Forever Young.
This one.
That's a horse.
This one should be.
I mean, are the pros just never lost a race and that's it?
Forever Young is an interesting case because we have seen Japanese racing get significantly better. We talked about two Japanese horses last year. Dermisso Tagate actually ran a pretty good race in the Derby last year, ran pretty well in the Breeders' Cup Classic as well. So we've seen these horses catch up significantly. And this is a horse that's 5 for 5 that won the UAE Derby, was able to win at a distance that's not his best. This horse is another one that's going to like a mile and a quarter. You just don't know, though. And that to me is the big question mark here, is like, is this the year he steps up? And I have a future ticket on Forever Young at 25-1. That was 6 weeks ago when I didn't like the rest of these horses, right? And we've seen progression from the U.S. horses that I didn't see from Forever Young in that final prep. I wouldn't be shocked. I'm not willing to bet it at this price. That to me is the big thing. I think eventually a Japanese horse will win. I'm just not sure this is the year.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know what the perfect analog is, Andy, for Forever Young? You know when we're talking preseason football and everybody's like, oh, yeah, this guy's never looked better. It's best shape of his life. This guy's never looked better. He's the best shape of his life. This guy doesn't look good. Right? It's like 1 out of 20. It's like, yeah, a little worried about this. Right? Well, the rumbling about Forever Young is not good. Honestly,
yeah.
And his workout
kind of makes me want to bet him.
But his trainer came out and said, the horse doesn't like kickback. He needs to be wide. Yes. He doesn't like it when dirt hits his face. Yes. You're in the 10 hole, dude. Like, you've got TO password and Track Phantom on either side. They're both going to go. What do you think is going to happen in the first 16th of a mile?
Yeah. When this, you know what? Try a hood without blinkers. Try a hood with blinkers. Try no hood. I don't know. Try something. Like, basically, when you're at this stage and every piece of news is bad, that is a gigantic red flashing siren to me, because everybody is just blowing smoke right now, like, for the most part. And if you're getting shade, that's bad. I got one more question on a specific horse, and then let's talk the weird ones. let's hit some bombs, some Somo bombs down the board.
Somo bombs.
Okay, we have spent 0.0 minutes on this podcast or any other podcast I've really heard listening to talking about the California crop and the Pac-12. The Pac-12, if it were, of this year's race has been completely forgotten because, number one, Bob Baffert's not invited because he's a dirty, rotten cheater. And number two, there is only one horse in this race, and his name is Stronghold. And I got to be honest with you, man. I overlooked Stronghold on my first pass. He was a toss on my first pass. On my second pass, I was like, my God, I might have overlooked the winner here. And my case is not great, but I got to tell you, man, the fact that they had this horse running into Kentucky last year, I think is noteworthy. The fact that he came through, you know, with decent adversity against the Baffert horse at the Santa Anita Derby, I think is noteworthy. And the fact that he's the 18 next to the 17 and can probably get a pretty decent trip, just sort of like kind of, you know, hang on the flank of Fierceness and hope Fierceness burns out. Like, that doesn't seem crazy to me. What is your temperature on Stronghold, and will you be using him in any of your exotics?
Well, I don't know if you've heard this, Drew, but he's breaking out of the 17 post. And no winner in 150 runnings has ever come out of the 17.
That's goddamn it. That's a great point. Wait, so who do I need? I need to take out someone inside. So I just got to like lay down in front of a horse and have him trip. And we'll move him over one and he's good. Okay.
Yeah, he's on my list. He's on my list to definitely use in trials and supers because, I mean, it's still Santa Anita. It's still a grade one stakes. Like, it's some what, six races, never finished worse than second. Some of them pretty decent. There's some other Derby contenders in a couple of those. I think if you look a little further back into his two-year-old season, like, the number's moving out, but again, I have him for an underneath horse for sure.
I wouldn't talk you off anyone who's 20-1, but this is not one that I would be using in my tries or supers. I agree with the narrative. I agree with the narrative that the California class kind of stinks. And if you look at, so Imagination, the horse that ran second in the Santa Anita Derby, he regressed badly in that race. And he's like Bob Baffert's UFL team, right? This is like if you put to go from the UFL to the NFL, what you're looking at from a prospect level, right? Right.
There was no Muth, wasn't it? Right.
This wasn't Muth. This wasn't Nisos. This was the D team at 2:00 p.m. on a Wednesday, right? Okay. This is not the team that you're looking for.
Just means he was using the experimental stuff on him, though. So exactly. Who the hell knows?
Trying something else out. Now, I will say, like the maiden breaking score at Churchill was a very good score. It was over resilience. It was right to his outside track Phantom, who's inside of him. I'm not using either of those horses either. So for me, if I start getting into this situation where if I think Stronghold's there, I kind of have to use resilience because he was really good up at Aqueduct last time. He looked very good, but the post is completely different for him. But the problem for me here with Stronghold is I can't picture the trip he wins. I think that he is one of those horses who is outside of fierceness in the second flight, right? And if you go back and you watch the race that he ran, he had a pretty decent trip there and just ran down a horse that's not very good. So I'm not willing to put him on tickets. He may be an early pace presence. We'll see what he does, but I can't get to the Stronghold love.
I'll tell you what, this is rough. This is rough here in a California guy just shit on the Pac-12 like this. I don't know what to say. I guess the Pac-12 doesn't
have
exist
either of you so been to Los Alamitos?
I have. I've been
yes,
there.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Of course. I went to Hollywood Park before it was SoFi.
I'm not even sure where Cypress is.
I live very close to Los Alamitos. Yeah. Like,
okay, I had to look up which part. I had to look up which part of town. Yeah, that was in. But he did
very
beat
close.
Coach,
very close to.
He beat Coach Prime in that one, and it is a. We're very anti Coach Prime today on the timeline. So,
we are.
I'm not. Oh God! Have you not kept up with the internet?
I was fine. I didn't even see. I don't even want to know.
He's talking some shit. So,
I
can't believe we're
500 to be first overall pick today.
Jesus,
we are shit talking the UFL as well. So, the only other one I had was if you have a quick opinion on resilience before I have a couple Oaks questions.
Resilience was going to be on my supers before the draw. If resilience had drawn inside, I would have been much more interested. But the fact that we're all the way outside, I thought the race at Aqueduct was phenomenal, the Wood Memorial. But the horse was sitting right behind the speed on the rail both turns and then tilted out and won easily three wide. Was in hand the whole time, won't have an issue with the distance. I can't from that 19 post and now the 18
as like a stalker that falls back, still it's hard for you to get it even in a super hot.
I wouldn't talk you off him in fourth. I just think that him hitting the top three from that post can be pretty tough.
Okay. Yeah, so what is your super shape like?
So fierceness, the top pick for me, which means I'm going to try and bomb it underneath inside the super. Okay. I've got Anna Marie in second right now. I've got Just a Touch, the 8 horse in third right now.
Ooh, interesting.
And then I've got the 4 Catching Freedom in fourth. But I do like both the 5 Catalytic at 30-1. The 6, Mystic Dan at 20-1, and even a little bit of Epic Ride all the way on the outside, 21 horse at 30-1 for some super love as well.
How long is
that? Well, I'm comparing notes here. Okay. There are a couple of pretty obvious tosses here, but any of the other super big prices that are just like kind of flirting with you where you think we might get just obscene number, a disarm type of number to hit for?
I wouldn't be shocked if you want a crazy number endlessly. I think is another one that's going to be crazy at 30-1. Who we don't know if he's good on dirt, and Oscar Performances actually have been decent on dirt, which surprises me. It's a turf horse who's actually sired a couple good dirt horses. Maybe endlessly at 30-1 is one that can run up there. I've heard a case for Domestic Product. He beat Fierceness in the Holy Bull, but that was not the version of Fierceness that I think we're going to see. He did not beat Hades. If he had beaten Hades there, I'd be a little more interested. 30-1, that's another one that I think.
No way he goes off 30-1, though, with Chad Brown and Irad, right?
it'd be pretty surprising. But like, yeah, to me, like, look, Track Phantom, Mystic Dan, Doorknock, they're like TO Password, Grandma the First, they're pretty easy chucks. I think you can get this down, Society Man, even down to about a 10 horse, you know, bunch that you are picking your superfecta from.
Okay. Favorite three horses to back and fade in matchups.
Okay. Favorite three to back and fade. So favorite horse to fade in matchups is
and actually probably... wait real quick before I'll give you, I'm going to buy you some time to let you kind of come up with the whole thing. Ready? Bookmaker, old friend of ours, used to come up with the prices over at Bookmaker.
He is doing something else in Ohio.
He's doing something else now. Okay, and yeah. he used to make his own numbers. And I know this because I met him at Churchill Downs last year and he told me all his whole process. And I was like, holy fucking shit. He used to make his own. He would specifically find horses of a similar style, match them up, come up with a fare. And he would send his whole book that he came up with over to first and foremost, Roxy Roxborough. He would say, hey, Roxy, I'm going to let you have first crack at these for blank dollars. And Roxy would say, okay, I'll take this one. I'll take this one. I'll take this one. And then they would move the numbers and then they would open up to public. Right. I mean, classic. That's the way you run a book. Right.
Yep.
You know what they did this year? They just spammed. They spammed. It's
there are like 100 matchups.
They literally were like, these horses are about the same price. Put them together. These horses are about the same price. Put them together. I have.
Yeah, they just used the morning lines, man.
I have an uncomfortable amount already into this, and I am starting to think, like, do I need to chill out or do I actually have an edge here? So with that said, who are your three favorite to back and who are your three favorite
to my quick
in
opinion
case I need to get off of some of these because they're taking you 3K to win a pop on this.
Drew, you probably have an edge, but it's also a 20 horse race. Yes, so you can still take a bath.
Yes, right.
Favorite horses to fade, number one would be Doorknock. Weird. Man, I think this is going to go bad for Doorknock because you go and then
verifying 2.0. Yeah,
exactly. Just the you're going to hear the beeping on the backstretch. Like, I think that horse backs up pretty good. Mystic Dan would be another one. I would be pretty heavy on the fade button here. Breaking out of the three posts, not a very good post. The most faulty buyer in the entire thing is the Southwest. Mystic Dan won the Southwest over a Rhett track on a golden rail, which means that the rail is faster than any other path.
I Googled that today because somebody had said that. I'm like, what the hell is
golden rail? So wet track, which had favored him, golden rail, which favored him, perfect trip. And that's why you saw that big of a number. I think he's a pretty easy horse to fade. Let's see. What's a third one here? I mean, depending on what, if you're be able to play TO Password against the other 30-1 shots, TO Password's a wonderful one to fade.
That one they were a little late on.
Yeah, I could see that.
Catalytic minus 145 over TO Password.
Yeah, give me Catalytic all day, every day.
Yeah.
If the other one, I guess, if I'm fading in matchups, it would actually be Fierceness, depending on the prices.
Sure,
because I think
he's not matched up against many horses because he's in a stratosphere of what they did was they literally just matched up similar morning lines.
I would say Stronghold actually would then be the other one I'd fade just because of the draw and coming from California and I don't think Stronghold wants a mile and a quarter.
You can catch a plus 190 on Honor Marie over Fierceness.
It's probably not enough.
It's probably
that's
not
the
enough,
big. Okay. That's the biggest dogs they're going to give you. It's
190s.
It's Sierra Leone catching Freedom and Honor Marie. Those are the three matchups against Fierceness.
So
it's
close. Honor Marie doesn't have it. Oh man, that's a bummer. Okay,
it's close. I would want someone like Just a Touch, someone who's going to be more forwardly placed, who I think doesn't have a problem with the distance against Fierceness versus a closer who can have trip trouble, right? Because I think the floor for Honor Marie could be pretty low as well if he gets stopped, and that would become a problem. Favorite horses to play in matchups. Honor Marie, Just a Touch would be one of them because I think Just a Touch gets the right trip. Just Steel would be one of them. Just Steel is a really try hard horse who's just going to run.
Just a workman, right? Workman like effort out of this horse every time you see him.
I'm surprised you're in the top seven, right? And at 20-1, you're going to be able to get a lot of other 20-1s that run worse than him there.
Like Doorknock.
Yeah, like Doorknock. Like Track Phantom, you know, like there's a lot of prices that are right around there.
You actually stole the first five bets I made.
Which is
a lot of that, like literally like just steal against this, basically the sprinting class that's in the 20-1 range against a workman, like 20-1. I'll take the workman every day of the week. Okay. All right. We're on the same page. I'm just going to let it ride then.
Oaks real quick. I'm going to rip through my notes and tell you who I liked. So Tapper Gently. That is not the name of this horse. Again, Tapper Gently. I was telling him before you got on, I was taking notes on my notes app while I was walking, and it was
auto-correcting
these names. Basically, like, so I have Toss.
Gently.
Toss. Completely tossed. Jin's a New York horse, maybe a closer. Where's My Ring won the Gazelle and was bet that day, but adding blinkers scares me. Regulatory Risk has actually run this distance. Torpedo Anna has run, I think not run this distance, has some distance questions, needs a trip. Good jockey. Lemon Muffin won the Honeybee. I don't know what that is. I don't follow the girls nearly as much. Fiona's Magic.
Lemon Muffin, by the way, the fastest five furlong workout of any horse last week, by the way.
I have notes not getting better, though, over the course of time. Fiona's Magic needs an easy pace. Bad last time out. Is it Tarifa or Tarifa?
Tarifa.
Tarifa. Somebody, I wrote this down, said she deserves to be the favorite. And then I just wrote Brad plus Flavian. Should be the favorite. Everland, toss. Into Champagne, toss. Sprinter, probably a toss. Ways and Means, kind of my horse with the weird layoff comeback. I like the comeback story. Can hit 100 maybe. Power Squeeze, won the Gulfstream Oaks. Over Ways and Means, undefeated in mile plus races. Just FYI, is an anagram of Justify because they're related. lost last time out, like, but looked fast.
Like stepsister or what?
Yeah,
no,
that's her daddy.
Her dad. Good setup for Just FYI. Leslie Rose won the Ashland, but this is a horrible post. So I like Ways and Means and Just FYI as my two quick looks from like an hour and a half of podcast this afternoon.
I have been a big Tarifa fan for a while. I played her two back. I played her last race. I'm probably going to have her on top in this spot too. I think she is the most classy. This is a wide open field though. You've got five horses that are between 7-2 to 5-1. Tarifa, the 8, is going to be your favorite. You've got the 5, Torpedo Anna, who's 5-1, then Ways and Means at 5-1, Just FYI, 9-2, and Leslie's Rose, 4-1. Any of the 5 could win this race. I mean, it is a pretty competitive race. I do think at that price, Tarifa has value at 7-2. I think she should be closer to the 3-1, 5-2 level favorite versus sitting there at 7-2 on the board. Torpedo Anna looked awesome last time out. And I liked West Omaha, who ran second in that race. That was the other Brad Cox horse. He split up West Omaha and Tarifa specifically to see how they would fare against other competition. Tarifa kept rolling. West Omaha ran second. They're both very good. I respect Torpedo Anna. If I'm going price hunting here, you mentioned Lemon Muffin, the 6. I think Lemon Muffin's a little interesting at 30-1. She won the Honeybee 2 back. That's a grade 3 at Oaklawn. Came back in the fantasy and was 5-1 in the fantasy. Torpedo Anna won that race. She was 2.5-1. Now, there was a ton of trouble for Lemon Muffin in that race. And when I look at the two and I'm like, hey, I'm getting now 30-1 versus 5-1, 6x the odds after they were just double the odds last time. I think Lemon Muffin's a little interesting at 30-1.
I honestly did a double take when I saw the Lemon Muffin workout. I was like, wait, what? How? Huh? Like, she beat the boys. Like, it was a weirdly fast run for her. And Lucas is a weird trainer. Like, he runs his horses way too much. But
into the ground,
yeah, but that said, like, yeah, she's going fast. General thought on Everland, who has the mutter. The sire was a mutter. 24%.
We might have
24%. You know, 24% mud win. You know, off track wins for the sire of Everland, who's 30-1 in a closer in what could be a pretty fast race.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk you off 3-1 shot. Never run on the dirt. That's the big question mark. It's been all synthetic forever. So good. You're not only trying something.
Oh, this is a two. We got ourselves a girl, two Phils, two Philominas.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, look,
I just wrote really can't well hang. That's my only notes on Neverland.
She would have needed a lot to go right. We'll put it that way.
Okay. All right. Well, her mother was a mother. That's all I really want.
We might need to do something about the misogyny in the naming of these races for fillies. They are all just like girly, you know, black-eyed Susans and fantasies and honeybees and lovey-dovey. Like, there's nothing tough about these names.
I'm going the opposite way. I think we need to make it more girly. Like, we need to diversify the community. We need more women.
I want the blood and guts, blood and guts 9 furlongs.
There are some great women handicappers out there, by the way.
What is the real quick opinion on the weather from both of you? I haven't followed the weather at all. That's one thing I haven't caught up on.
Friday looks
is it looking super sloppy shitty. Friday?
Yeah, Friday looks pretty shitty. And then I think Saturday is going to be just fun.
Yeah, it's been nice the last couple of days. So there's not a lot of moisture in the track or in the turf right now. So even if it does rain one day, we should be okay.
A little diamond dust.
Yeah. I feel like this time of year, every year, the forecast is way grosser, and sometimes it ends up being fun. So it might just end up being fun.
You can only place one Derby Oaks double. You have one bet. You got to use one horse from each.
It sounds
based
like,
on price, based on anything sounds, you want.
Yeah, sounds like a 20. You're carrying forward 2024 year of the chalk.
Yeah, I don't like picking chalk on these. If you guys like, you guys have seen me do this. Anyway. We've done this like 3-4 years. I have not picked chalk in any of these races. But it's Tarafa into Fierceness. I do think they're the best two horses. I think there's actually value on both of them, even as the favorites, because the competition is so deep in the Oaks, and because Sierra Leone is sitting there at the same price as Fierceness, which is just incorrect in the Derby.
Yeah, you know, in my experience, if you're at the track, if you're talking to people who aren't as in the freaking weeds as we are, and you tell them the winning horse, it doesn't matter if they're 2-1 or 20-1.
Yeah,
they're happy you gave them the winner. They don't give a shit.
You know what's fun? Cashing tickets. That's what's fun.
Winning a bet is fun.
Yeah,
I wish I could remember what that felt like. But yes, ultimately, if you tip people Fierceness and Fierceness wins, most of them are going to be like, oh, that was the chalk. But some of them are going to be like, holy shit, how did you know?
Wins a win.
Yeah.
It's like pizza or sex. It's not bad. It doesn't matter how you get there. I think I'm out of questions. I have,
we covered everything I wanted to talk about.
I think we really did. We really did a good job. I wrote no Baffert horses. I'd kind of forgotten about that.
What's your Derby day like, Mike?
Going to be busy. I'm going to be over. I'm going to be in Vegas, which will be fun. My parents are actually going to be in Vegas. I'm going to watch the Derby with my dad.
Where are you staying?
I'll be in Circa.
Downtown? Nice.
Yeah. So I'm doing the show from noon to 3 Eastern, the handle over on VSiN. So that'll be the three hours of the prep races. I'll be on there. A lot of Derby talk, a lot of undercard talk. Then I'll be on from 5:15 to 5:45, leading right up until the race. I'll be doing a guest spot on VSiN Tonight Live there as well. So I'll be talking a lot of Derby stuff right before it actually goes off too.
Okay. So Andy, before I ask you about your Derby day, Mike, are you going to be at Best? Next time we're going to see you, Bet Bash?
I've never been to Bet Bash.
You going this
Stop
year?
Down, baby.
When we'll be it? Down at Circa, middle of August.
August 6th through 9th. I had to look this up yesterday for my wife.
I will probably be in Circa that weekend. So,
we'll see you there. I'm very excited for those who are listening to the deep dive. We're going to do a live podcast there. We're going to basically, I think we kind of fleshed out what it's going to be, but it's going to be mostly we'll keep it a secret. Why give it away now? Tune into the deep dive all summer for the content.
Clues. There'll be clues.
I assume you're going to Del Mar?
I will be at Del Mar for the Breeders' Cup as well. Looking forward to that. So I'll definitely see you guys there.
Andy?
I'm trying to work my way up to Saratoga for the Travers, too.
I was going to say, too.
Did you think at all about going to Saratoga for the Belmont?
I thought about it. It's
like a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing, probably, right?
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough to go from California to New York for one weekend for a race really with a kid with a five-year-old daughter and everything it's else really when tough. I'm traveling for weekends, too.
It's a lot further for you guys.
Yeah.
Tough. And honestly, if you do find yourself visiting, I think family or somebody in here.
Wife from Stillwater.
You better text me if you end up in Canterbury, because I'd be like, you know, it's a work thing, it's a networking thing, honey. I gotta run up to Canterbury, take care of a few things for the afternoon. I'm tempted to go this weekend.
You're not going?
I may. And half the reason is because I need to get a new tux for a wedding anyway. So I'm getting this nice dinner jacket that I've picked out. I might just get it.
What happened?
And go up there.
What? I thought you were going to fit into the old one.
I found a better one. I found a better one.
Oh, want a new style.
It's blue paisley. I really like it. So it's. I don't know what I'm doing, but it may be at Canterbury Downs. I'm going to enjoy that a lot. Either way, I'm pumped for this. So appreciate you, Mike. Talk about, you know, your other content and stuff that you're going to be doing besides that Saturday show between now and then, that where people can find some more if they want to go real deep. I think there's probably hours of you talking.
Tell people where to buy the Racing Dudes.
And if they want the Racing Forms from
that. That thing is just an absolute.
I buy those from Mike.
The best is, like, Mike is here out of his own goodwill. Don't send it to your friend for free. Tell your friend where to go buy it.
So you can find me over at racingdudes.com. Do the Magic Mike Show every Monday and Thursday. Monday of this week, we went through every single one of the 22 horses that were eligible for the Kentucky Derby in the gates, talking about whether or not we had them to win, exacta, trifecta, superfecta, all that jazz. Magic Mike Show tomorrow is going to cover the late pick five ending in the Kentucky Derby from Saturday, including my pick five from that sequence. So if you want to catch that, make sure you head over there. Catch the Sama Bombs every Thursday through Sunday. That'll be available for Churchill Downs both Saturday and Sunday. RacingDudes.com has a guide out as well. And I still got some bets for you guys, too. You want me to rip through these?
Yes, of course.
Yes. All right. So absolutely.
I figured we want to pick up the pens at some point here. I'll be playing two superfectas in the Derby. The first one is going to be 17 with 4, 7, 8. With 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. With 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay.
The second one, I'm going to chuck them both. Fierceness and Sierra Leone. Sweet. And we're going to play a 7-8 with 4-7-8 with 4-5 with 4-6-7-8 with 4-5-6-7-8.
We're talking like dollar pays 20K with that.
Yeah,
that'll pay like 50. Not even kidding.
I was gonna say a dime buys you a car, I think, at that point.
So that would be box cars, baby. We'll be having some fun with that one. Plays for the 2 days. Race number 4 on Friday. Number 3, Elysian Field, 3-1 on the morning line. Like that one quite a bit. Race number 6 on Friday. Number 3, Silent Stone, 9-2 on the morning line. Turf sprinting, should get a nice setup there. Like that one quite a bit as well. Saturday, race number 6, the 10 horse, Vava, 3-1 on the morning line. Trying to turn the tide on Avastar, I think it is.
Side of the 20-cent pick six, right?
Yes, it is. That one's the race before it. Yeah, I think it's the race before it. Race number 10 on Saturday, number 4, Mr. Wireless, 6-1.
Whoa.
Seven furlong dirt sprint, second off the layoff. The horse can sprint. I think he's going to be really dangerous. I
love that and one. So I was going sprints. I was going
instant,
back and forth.
If you like instant gratification at 2 minutes, you should do some sprint races. It's even better.
Oh yeah, I had that one circled. The 4 draw was pretty nice. There was one other horse that I had. I forget now, but it was outside, and I was like, "Fuck it, wireless single it."
Yeah.
Okay, so single that one in the horizontals. Okay.
Yep, I will be playing that one pretty short. I'm going to play a double the 9th race into the 10th race because the long shot I like the most the entire weekend is the number 10 horse in the 9th race set at 10-1. Horse has been on the turf twice at Gulfstream, stepping up in class, but the last quarter of a mile for this horse in the 2 Gulfstream races has been phenomenal. Should be forwardly placed, not a ton of speed in the race. Love the 10 horse set in the 9th race on Saturday at 10-1.
Okay, this is hugely valuable because honestly, that was the one I had the most trouble with as I was trying to come up with my pick six. I was literally like, God damn it, I'm gonna have to spam on that one. And also while we're at it, like, yeah, I was like, I'm just gonna have to spam it. Shit. But when you're at 20 cents, who cares? The favorite in that one is probably gonna be what? Agate Road, who they call Agate Road for some reason. Why is that pronounced Gate? That's Agate.
I have no idea.
It's offensive to Minnesotans.
It's offensive as a rock hounder. I can't believe they call agate a gate.
The Minnesota state rock mineral is the Lake Superior agate.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Disrespectful.
That's like our favorite rock here.
Yeah, there's some good northern.
Okay, so we're going against a gate with a set. I like it. All right, good one.
Yeah, I like set quite
tough,
a bit. In
that one's a tough handicap, man. Long-ass turf race.
Shit. Yeah, that
those are hard.
It's going to be interesting to see. I like the 5 Legend of Time is the European horse in there too, and I think the 3 is a little interesting at a price of 15-1. But of all of the 3 set at 10-1, I think is the best price as a pretty decent shot at winning the race.
Okay, yeah, three.
You know what
three,
I do with 10, the turf pop, races, pop. Drew?
Yeah, good. What's that?
I just, you know what I do with the turf races when I don't know what to do?
Oh
no, I just bet the Chad Brown horses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like it's just the. I don't want to think too hard on this.
Did he have one in that?
Was it I don't even know. Chadburn? I'm just saying that's what we do.
Gates Pletcher.
Pletcher is a gate. Okay. Pletcher and Irad are a gate. They're gonna get that. That'll probably go off as your favorite.
No Browns in that one.
No Browns in that one. Yeah. Wow. Weird one. 3-year-olds too, right? Like these are all kind of quite, you know, so this is basically the parallel to the Derby on turf, right?
Yes. Yeah. So it's a 3-year-old race. Essentially it is, the parallel of the Derby. Actually, Endlessly, who is in the Derby, was supposed to run in this race, but the connections decided to go to the dirt instead of staying on the turf path.
Yes. Just a fun little tidbit. And
someone's asking a question. Are you going to use Zozosh in the 10th on Saturday?
Zozosh, I believe, in third or second, one of the two. I do like Zozosh, but I have I don't remember who I have on top, actually. Let me check. Saturday.
Mr. Wireless in the 10.
Yes. Yeah, I have Mr. Wireless over Zozosh.
Yeah, I like that one. I like that call. That one stood out to me too. I think Mr. Wireless was a fun pick. Jen, just for shits and giggles, the American Turf, I feel like the favorite wins that one like 10% of the time. That one is like the highest. That one's like the highest median of the whole weekend. That one has like the highest median payout.
Remember who won it last year?
Oh no, was it that motherfucking No Balls?
No, it was Web Slinger, your boy.
A Web Slinger. He's running again this weekend. You saw that, right?
He is running this weekend. Yeah. I'm not using him this weekend, but he is
No Balls was the only loser on my pick 6 last year.
Yeah.
And I was
monster number. I hate that horse.
Hate that horse. Yes. Yes. Glue Factory. Straight to the Glue Factory. All right. Well,
I can never hate a horse, you guys.
You haven't cost me enough money yet, then.
Perfect.
I love it.
All right. I feel better prepared. Hopefully you guys do too. Yeah. Find Mike. What's your Twitter handle again? I never get it right. Somo.
SomoBomb18. SomoBomb18.
18.
Yep.
Yep. All right, man. Enjoy the races. Thanks for your time. Have a great weekend. Best of luck. And if Fierceness wins, may Anna Marie come second.
Let's go.
They're epic in the books. Well done, man.
Oh, now I'm like too jacked to not go to Canterbury Saturday.
You guys got to come to.
I got to see what the weather is
one of these days.
It's not.
This year, by the way, this year's security is like. And stuff, but I bet you next year when it's 150